Why is he making this so complicated?
This is absolutely garbage. Who wrote this?
I did.
I should have known this came from a lawyer.
Zlatan. Creating problems as usual. So tell me, what do you think about the new format?
Always had problems with the Champions League.
Because you never won it?
I see the president comes with jokes. By the way, terrible script.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
And finally, oh, the international break's here.
Oh. Thank God.
Oh, God, the start of this season's dragged, isn't it? It seems to have been going on for weeks. But finally, we get to watch some international football. It's great just to have a little break from the insanity that is club football, isn't it?
No, I'm enjoying it very, very much. I'm really enjoying club football, especially the Championship, because it's the best league in the world. I'm loving it. I don't want it to stop. Why are we stopping?
Because international football, yeah. International football is the ultimate form of football. We were literally talking about this over the summer. So, you know, now international football is back. We should be jumping for joy. We should be happy, right? At last, international football is back. Thank God. Right? It's club football dragging along for what, 2-3 weeks?
Yeah.
God, it seemed like forever.
Yeah, it did. It did. Oh, obviously, it was forever for Jan because there was an extra week involved. For him, you know, it's. I wonder if he's been gaslit by club football.
We've played a whole 4 games. I mean, that's nearly a full season, isn't it, really?
Well, you need a break then.
Yeah.
Well, no, we don't.
An international break, specifically.
We need to keep the momentum up, Terry. That's what we need to do.
Because you need to know how Lee Carsley's England is going to shape up. These are things you need to know, Jan. It's important.
Well, should we talk about that? Because obviously, look, if Jan isn't educated on these matters, then he should be. Lee Carsley obviously named his first England squad last week. There's got a few names in it from his successful under-21 teams in there. It looks pretty exciting, doesn't it, Terry?
Yeah. Jack Grealish, of course, is back.
Of course he is, yes.
Rehabilitated already, of course he is. So making us wonder what on earth is going on there.
Him and Harry Maguire are back.
But I think it's good that he's, like, I see Rico Lewis's name there, Angel Gomez, names that he trusts. I think that's rather cool, you know, like thinking, I've seen these guys up close. I know them. I trust them. I reckon they could play for the senior team.
Yeah.
I said, oh, I'm the senior team manager. Right. Okay. I better put my money where my mouth is then and play them or at least bring them in.
You got names like Tino Livramento, Noni Madueke. Don't think that they're going to be seeing a huge amount of game times in this Nations League window, but it's great that they're on the bench and training with the rest of the players, a load of the players that went to the Euros. And looking forward, these are the players that you would expect to move on and be in the main squad when the World Cup rolls around in 26. So I think it's good that players like Kyle Walker aren't there, 34 years old. Are you really expecting him to be the fullback for you at the next World Cup? Well, let's get some new players in there and let's push it forward. I think it's a very, very promising squad there, considering that he hasn't got players as well, like Jude Bellingham, who isn't there because he's not playing at the moment.
Yeah, Jude Bellingham's injured. But, you know, at 20, how long can we expect him to be playing in that role at 20? I mean, he's been there for ages, it seems.
Yeah, that's true.
Might be time to start thinking about bringing the next embryo on to replace him, so... There's a part of me that's thinking to myself also, because there's been, and this is all paper talk, but it's like the suggestion that perhaps the camp is not as united as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that maybe there's an opportunity here to bring in some fresh faces, just to sort of bring in a new dynamic into the squad that might help. Or it might just be that he goes, well, you know, this is my chance to do this. And if I'm going to do this and if I'm going to keep this job, I have to do it the way that I want to do it. Because that's the only way I'll succeed.
Yeah.
And a couple of winnable fixtures.
Yes.
Shall we say?
Yeah, I'd say
winnable fixtures. Let's not get carried away and complacent, but certainly winnable fixtures.
It's not entirely a free ride for Lee Carsley, though, is it?
No, not really. But, you know, I'd be surprised if England didn't come away with a couple of wins from this. It did make me think, though, there was an opportunity here for him to put his own stamp on this, which he has, as you've said, some of the players you've talked about. But he could have put a real stamp on it, couldn't he? Given that these are winnable games, and given how Harry Kane played in his last few England games, was there an opportunity for him to drop Harry Kane and give somebody else a real chance without the spectre of Harry Kane hanging over them? I wonder.
Well, he did score for Bayern at the weekend, didn't he?
He did score for Bayern at the weekend. I have not, because Sky Sports didn't put the Bayern game on, even though they said they would. So I didn't get the chance to watch it. So I don't know how well he played. I watched a bit of the first game that he played in the last week, because the Bundesliga's only been going for 2 weeks, so it's difficult to know. And I feel that he certainly looked a little bit more integrated into that Bayern team than he was when he was at England. Because I mean, I feel certain that Harry was carrying a back injury during the tournament that hopefully now has been cleared and now with you know, he's back there. But you would expect a player to play better for his club side than he would for his national team in a lot of cases, because he's just better integrated. So I think it would be bold, very courageous to leave Harry out now unless you spoke to him and said, could you use a rest, for example? And as captain, I'd be astonished. I mean, I don't know the guy, but I'd be really surprised if he felt that that was something that he could do. And I think that it might draw unnecessary attention to himself, Lee Carsley, put a lot of pressure on him to do that. I do like your thinking, though. It's nice. It's good. It's out-of-the-box thinking. It's what we like. You know, he is a good player. He does score goals. He was pretty rubbish in Euro 2020.
Yeah, that's true enough. That is true enough. I mean, to be fair, he's in the squad. It doesn't necessarily mean he's going to feature widely. So let's see. I mean, you know, maybe I was being a bit impish there. I mean, Harry Kane is a fine player, but I just think that, you know, sometimes you do have to move on. And you can be held back by past glories, you know, and hoping they're going to repeat, which, of course, we were all let down by. I'm not blaming it all on him, but he was terrible.
But it is his fault.
But it's his fault that we didn't win the Euros twice.
It's entirely his fault. If he plays in both games, which he probably will do, it'll be his 100th cap in the second game. So in the Finland game, I think that. So I think that might actually mean that he will play. He will start both games. I'm sure of it. What do we think about the omission of Ben White? There is three defenders in there. Two with one appearance and one Tino Livramento without any. And Ben White obviously didn't get on with Steve Holland from all reports. But now they're not there and Ben White's not returned to the England squad. So does that suggest that he's not coming back to the England squad at any time soon, even though Southgate's gone?
I wonder whether it wasn't as one-sided as maybe as we thought. Maybe he doesn't want to play for England. I mean, that was what was suggested, wasn't it, from the England camp, or certainly through journalists who were pointing us in the right, in inverted commas, direction. But, you know, he's a fine player. Why wouldn't he be in there? But maybe, has he got a reputation as a troublemaker? I don't know. Well, certainly, I mean, Terry, the top of the conversation was talking about discontent or lack of cohesion in the camp. You know, maybe they don't want to take that risk.
That was what Archie said in your conversation in the first episode of this season, wasn't it? That he didn't believe there was that level of cohesion in the squad, that maybe it wasn't all going great in there. But then, you know, he's a sensationalist journalist, isn't he? So, you know,
he's looking for the angles.
He is a good mate of Harry Kane, though, isn't he? Him and chatting all the time, aren't they?
Oh, so. Yeah. Thick as thieves, those two guys. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, of course, because they both speak English, you understand. Yes. So they both talk English, living in Germany. Yes. So, yeah, they stick together.
They go over there and they don't want to integrate, do they?
No. No, I mean, I think that, you know, Archie speaks some variety of low German, but I mean,
could probably order a kebab.
I think people just nod at him and say, yes, Archie, in English. I think maybe there might be some walking back that needs to be done there, because I think if that is all about Steve Holland, it won't be all about Steve Holland. All right, fine. If Ben White had a problem with Steve Holland and that's the reason, well, that's a driving force or one of the main reasons why he decided not to play for England, then obviously just because Steve Holland is now gone, it doesn't necessarily mean that the damage that was caused by that public split has been repaired. It might well be that there's a bit of walking back that needs to be done, possibly on both sides. And maybe they're not ready to do that. And it might well be that Lee Carsley thinks, I've only got a shot at this for a few games. I don't need this. So he can stay where he is for the time being if he doesn't want to play. it might well be that Ben White might have to go cap in hand and say, look, I want to come back and I want to play for England again. Mats Hummels said rather publicly that he didn't think that Edin Terzic would be a good coach for Borussia Dortmund and didn't really want to play for the club anymore while Edin Terzic was the coach. Edin Terzic did resign shortly thereafter, but Mats Hummels did not get his new contract picked up.
Mm.
So, you know, there's consequences for doing stuff like this, for sticking your head above the parapet, going public on these things. And I don't think you necessarily just get to walk back in unless, you know, some work is done in the meantime. And Ben White's a busy guy. He's got a career at Arsenal to work on. Nobody needs this right now. It's just relationship management. He needs a little bit of time.
Yes. Well, one England defender that is in the squad is Crystal Palace's Mark Gay.
Crystal Palace's Mark Gay.
Yeah, not Newcastle's Mark Gay.
N-I-D, chaps. N-I-D. Never in doubt. We were all sitting here going, ha, 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 journalists. Yes. No, Mark Gay, he stayed. And Oliver Glasner saying, with the kind of bravado that said that he would do, you know, in a moment like that, said it was never in doubt. There was no question that he was leaving for Newcastle in this window. But I'm pleased, and you know that obviously it's official. The fact that he left it until transfer deadline day to say this suggests that maybe there might have been some. I think if Newcastle come back with and paying the figure that Palace had wanted, then obviously it will be a different story. But I think what he means is that they knew perfectly well that Newcastle were not going to run to the figure that Palace had in mind. They've decided that because he had an outstanding Euros, and he did, and because he got to the final of the Euros, and he did, that he is now a world-class Galactico and knows that that's the salary. So they're probably thinking closer to 100 million. I don't know how realistic that is, but I suspect this is a good way of telling Newcastle to sling their hook, which is basically what's happened. And they've wasted an entire window trying to sign a player they couldn't afford.
Yeah,
when they could have actually signed a centre-half that they could afford.
Hmm.
I know they complain about how they haven't got any money because of PSR, but they've got loads of money. They just need to sign players they can afford, like everybody else does.
They've just got to learn how to play the system. They've just got to learn how to sell hotels to themselves. That's what they've got to do.
They do. They do. Or at the very least, they should have a good scouting network and a list of short list of players that they want to sign. Say, right, can we sign this guy? No. Right, who's next? And then sign that guy. But it appears that they don't. I think they've still got a bit of work to do in Newcastle to get some things sorted out, despite the money that they've had. And it's hardly surprising because they've had the guts ripped out of them by Mike Ashley for so long that it isn't surprising that they need a bit of time probably to rebuild their things. But yeah, that's brilliant. So yeah, Mark Gay, he stays. And actually, it's been a great window for Palace.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about the closing of the transfer window in a bit. But the one last thing I want to talk about before we move away from the international break, and that's the fact that these two games that England have got lined up, these two games that everyone's got lined up in the next week and a half, is the start of a new round of the Nations League, the fourth round of the Nations League. And they've changed it again. They've made a little tiny tweaks. Improvements. Yes, Terry, that great reaction face. That'll go straight onto YouTube. It's only a minor things, but now, whereas before it was the group winners in the top league going on to semi-finals and finals the following June. Now it's not. Now it's the top two teams in the A-League that are going through into quarterfinals in March. Two legs quarterfinals in March. Then the winners of those going on into finals in June.
Ooh.
Of course, this doesn't mean anything to England because we're in League B this time round. But what it does mean is there's a lot riding on if you win your group in League B. So if England win their group in League B, it will make qualifying for the World Cup potentially a lot easier. Now, you have to pay attention to this one. Terry, I'm going to get the little model cow out, okay?
Thank you. I might just say, how interesting at the end of that. As long as there's no follow-up,
yeah, feel
then
free.
That's my comment.
Feel free, if you just want to put your hand up and say, that's fascinating, then that's great. Now, World Cup qualifying this time, we've got 16 places in Europe to go for, but a very compressed space of time for them to play because they start qualifiers in March and they finish them in the following March. So very compressed time to get it in. what it'll be, it'll be, I think, 12 groups of either 4 or 5 teams. And if you win that group, you'll go through to the finals. Now, because the Nations League goes on, there's lots and lots of playoffs that are going to be played in March. There's finals that can be played in June. That even compresses the World Cup qualifying even more if you go on to those. So those top 8 sides, those teams from the top of League A, are guaranteed to be in groups of 4. Whereas if you win your group in League B, you'll be in a group of 5. So you'll avoid all of those teams, all of those top 8 teams in Europe are going to be avoided if you win your group. And it works that way all the way down through. So you get into those 5-team groups if you finish 4th in League B as well, or if you finish in 4th place in League A. So those are the teams that are going to be in that one. And yet in the 4-team groups, you're going to have teams that are all the way up at the top there. And it also means, because there's only, I think, 6 of these 4-team groups, you're going to see 2 teams in those 4-team groups as well. So that puts quite a bit of jeopardy in there for some of the bigger hitters in there. So going to be quite imbalanced groups, well, potentially unbalanced groups if the Nations League goes according to plan. But these are sort of things that will come to light when we get closer to the business end of it.
That sounds very interesting.
That was fascinating.
Fascinating. And very, very clear as well. I think that it does reinforce the fact that the Nations League does serve some kind of purpose and then there's value in participating in it. And can I just say also, I mean, although I am partly horrified by the massive fixture congestion that's going on and the additional burden on players, expanding the knockout phase of the Nations League, I'm here for. I'm here. Turning that into a mini tournament, as far as I'm concerned, go for it. I know it's wrong and it's bad because, you know, ooh, players' health and all of that. I know that. But at the same time, yay, more international football. So I think it's all good. The Nations League is all good. That's why we love it.
When the Nations League was conceived, it was about getting rid of all of the meaningless friendlies that they were playing. So this just adds more weight to that, really. And it just means that it is worth more. And the small price to pay to have a few more games there. You're right, Terry, about players' health. It needs to be called out. But, you know, there's nothing worse than having international games when you don't want them, is there? Like now, for example. I'm not letting that go. I'm not letting it go, goddammit.
Apart from September, which could just get fucked.
In previous incarnations, it's only been the teams that finished top or bottom that have had anything else to worry about. Teams in the middle of the groups just stay in the same league. Now there's lots more playoffs. Teams in the top league, everyone will be involved in some kind of game. Apart from the teams that are relegated, will be involved in a playoff when March comes around. So it means that there aren't any dead rubbers, which was one thing that, all right, you've replaced friendlies with the Nations League, but by the time you get to the business end of it, if one team's run away with it and one team's been crap, there's two teams in the middle that really don't have anything to play for. So it should extend that all the way through now. So, yeah, minor improvements. Obviously, they'll probably change it next time for whatever reason. It'll probably be a massive league next time, won't it?
It'll be Swiss model, massive league. Huge league with lots and lots of teams in it. Love it.
Love it.
It is good to see that they're allowing the concept to evolve, though, isn't it? Rather than just sticking with, well, we're doing this. And yeah, so, yeah. You know. No,
I think that's right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I was about to suggest the same thing, actually. And I think that it's quite, with the Nations League in particular, I think, you know, because it is a young league, I think why not look at the circumstances and go, you know what, this looks like a bit rubbish here. This could be rubbish this year because of this. Why don't we just tweak this a bit? We can always switch it back again in 2 years' time when we come around again, judge the circumstances and make some tweaks accordingly. I mean, why not?
Well, I think we've said before, this could easily be transferred into a Swiss model because that seems to be the way that UEFA are going at the moment. And Friday, not only did Friday have the closing of the transfer window, but it also had the newfangled UEFA draws, which is basically someone just pressing a button and AI working it all out. That was great, wasn't it, Jan?
That's it. All of our jobs are gone. Yeah, it is AI taking our jobs, and it's the beginning of the end.
The guy who folded up the little bits of paper, he's out of a job now, isn't he?
He is.
I'm sure he did something else at UEFA headquarters.
No, really? No. That was his job.
That was his goal.
That was 100% of his job. No, it's just smart, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's not like a World Cup draw like we do. When you've got a brew pad with little pins in it, that needs to go through the processes, doesn't it? But, you know, why wouldn't you just press a button and get the fixtures sorted out? The technology's there, Graham, so why don't we just use it?
Well, exactly, Terry. And you know, it may not be 100% transparent.
No.
But the draw wasn't anyway, was it, really?
No, and it's the group stages as well. I mean, I think if you're getting into knockout stages, I think when it starts to get serious, and I think that there's some value in having some integrity and having human beings, you know, just warm the balls like the old-fashioned way if you want to rig the draw. I don't know if it's AI doing it, then my immediate thought was, well, you know, I mean, Real Madrid are then playing Borussia Dortmund and then Manchester City all at the same time at the same game. But if it was ChatGPT anyway doing it, then that's probably what they'd come back with. Or they'd just like draw Luton Town. And you go, are you sure Luton Town are in the Champions League? Yes, Luton Town qualify for the Champions League. I know. I appreciate that there are always, you have to be vigilant about corruption and about fixing and all of that stuff. And I do appreciate that. But for a draw for a competition, which, yes, is rather convoluted and requires some computation, then use a computer.
Yeah, it gets rid of all those fudges that UEFA put in anyway, where you're separating Kosovan teams out.
Yeah, the constraints. Yeah, pre-program the constraints in and just hit a button.
But I suppose now, at least, we have a fair idea of how it's going to work now that we've actually seen teams being drawn out. And I'm sure listeners at home who've been playing Football Manager for this season have already gone through this anyway, where they've seen the draw coming out, so they knew what to expect anyway. But I think now, especially for me, with us, I've seen Arsenal's fixtures come out, and I look at that and think, yeah, it's real now. This is how it's going to work. And it looks really exciting. I'm actually really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think it looks really interesting. When it was first mooted, I was a little bit like I was, Grim, when you were talking about the new format of the Nations League, where I had a bit of a flashback to GCSE mathematics. So it was the same sort of thing when I was first presented with this idea. But actually, yes, you're right. Once the fixtures came out on Friday and the draw had been made, it became a lot clearer to me what was going on, because it is actually quite straightforward, isn't it? What I'm really looking forward to, I'm looking at a page now with 36 teams in one league. And it's just, I mean, that's just madness. But in a very, very, very positive way, it's got the chance of some chaos being injected into that. And, you know, it's what football should be all about, shouldn't it? So, yeah, it's going to be great. So for the Champions League and for the Europa League, there's each team plays 8 games, don't they? 4 at home and 4 away, and a little bit less for the guys in the Conference League, where they just play 6, 3, and 3. Yeah, it's good. It gets away from the kind of staid and quite old-fashioned, I think, group stage, and injects a little bit of jeopardy and interest into it. Yeah, looking forward to it.
A bit of jeopardy, but 24 teams go through out of those 36. So I can imagine already that with so many teams and a relatively small amount of games, that mid-table is going to be very, very congested. And by the time it gets around to match day 7 and 8, you're really not going to tell who's going to be able to go through or not. And I think it is going to go right down to the wire, because I think it's going to be so close. I think you'll get some teams running away at the top, some teams that always do well, and then you'll have teams at the bottom that are going to be thinking, well, okay, we're really in over our depth here. But it's going to be the mid-table which is going to provide all the entertainment on that final match day, which should prove quite exciting, I think, anyway.
It's the rush to the top 8, isn't it? That's where they want to go. So 8 is a good number.
Yeah.
Qualifiable. But, you know, out of 36, you've got a lot of work to do. You've got the fact that you're not playing teams home and away, and you've got the seeding structure somewhat different. And so you are playing teams that are well matched. And part of the reason why it was sold was that you get more matches between bigger teams in the group stage, which is what people want and what audiences want. And what sponsors want, I suppose. So you've got that extra bit of peril. It'll be harder and yet easier to qualify. But you get to that top 8. So you're in that mid-table, then there's a good chance, if this works out quite well and it's close, that you could be going into the final game of the season and you could be 12th, 13th, and still have a chance of getting into that top 8.
Mm.
Outside chance, but a chance, a mathematical chance. And that's what you want, isn't it? Because then everyone's going, what the hell is going on? And everyone's basically watching that final match day and going, What on earth is going on? And there's even value in finishing in from 9th to 16th because you get seeded in the playoff group. And then if you finish in the 17th to 24th, then alas, you are unseeded. And so you've got a harder route. So there's value in doing this right. You want to go, yeah, you're right, Graham. There'll be some. Real Madrid will finish like third, because they'll qualify into the top eight quite comfortably. And then they'll probably relax the last couple of games and, you know, just play with nine men or something like that, you know. But for most other teams, it's going to be a bit more of a scrap. I think it will work out quite nicely. Like everything else, after a few years, it will probably settle down and become less chaotic. But again, it's worth stressing that although this is a kind of hybrid of the classic Swiss model, there's some guy in Chile who's trying to sue UEFA because he's saying you've nicked my formula. So it's not exactly the Swiss model, but this has worked in other competition formats and has been tried and trusted and I think proved to be, you know, exciting and engaging for many years. So it would be nice to think that that would be the case when it's used in football, and we could all end up doing it if it works really, really well within reason. Other competitions maybe and stuff like that, who knows. Maybe that's a way of doing the FA Cup.
Whoa, Terry.
When you get to the third round stage, well, I mean, maybe when you get to the final, I don't know, the round of 16 or a round of 32.
Why not?
I'm just chucking shit out of the air here, guys. I'm not being serious, but, you know, or the League Cup.
Hey, blue sky thinking. We shouldn't be afraid of it.
Well, we are on blue sky, so yeah, we should.
Exactly that.
Infinitely more interesting than what the alternative would have been, which would have been a Super League. So hopefully this keeps people a little bit more interested in that. Normally when I look at the European competitions, I'm like, well, I don't really need to worry about it until February, really. That's when it starts getting interesting. But you're right. I mean, I was just looking at the fixtures there for Arsenal, as you said, Grim, and I won't read them all out, but it looks really, really interesting, doesn't it, from the get-go, which really wasn't the case under the old system. So hopefully this does put the Super League to bed once and for all. And this is really successful because I think it's been really well thought out, well executed, and hopefully it's going to be entertaining to watch.
Yes, me too. So, well, that starts obviously once this international break's over. So it will come soon enough because the international break never lasts as long as you hope it does. It's over before you know it, really. So more's the pity, eh? Now, it's 8 games for the Champions League and the Europa League, but it's only 6 games for the Conference League for some reason. So maybe that might be a bit more chaotic because there's only 6 games in this big old league. So that might add a bit of jeopardy in there as well. Larne have made it there. Northern Ireland's Larne, the first Northern Ireland team to reach the group stage of European competition. That's a special time, isn't it? And their first game, who's it against?
Well, their first home game is at home to Shamrock Rovers.
Wow.
Which is, I think the atmosphere at Windsor Park that day is going to be absolutely belting. I think that'll be very difficult to get a ticket for. But, I mean, they're going to play some teams that they could never hope to play, obviously, because they're the first Northern Irish team to qualify for that. But they've got Mulder, Shamrock Rovers, they've got Ghent in there as well. So there's some seriously big sides, and they've done really well. They're well funded. They've got a great following, and you know, maybe they might bloody a few noses in the process. It'd be good to see.
Just great, just to be there for the ride, though, isn't it, Terry?
Absolutely, and I'm delighted. I mean, I've got a Larne shirt. I've got family. I had family in Larne, so I'm buzzing. I'm looking forward to it. It would be amazing to try and catch a game, although I don't know whether that's really realistic. I was kind of praying. It would have been great if they'd drawn Chelsea. That would have been phenomenal, wouldn't it?
That would have been excellent.
And Shamrock Rovers did.
Yes,
and they'll be playing at Stamford Bridge. I think that's the last game. Oh, what a great day out that'll be.
That will be amazing, yeah. And I can't wait to hear Maresca's excuses when they only draw 1-1.
You're actually assuming that Maresca's still going to be in the job then.
Yes, indeed. Let me just rephrase that. I'm looking forward to hearing name of Chelsea coaches excuses when they only draw 1-1.
Of course, Chelsea added a bit more of the weirdness to the close of the transfer window with business. Terry, has Jadon Sancho's gone to Chelsea? What on earth is going on there?
Oh, it pains me. Obviously, Jadon Sancho has to leave Manchester United. They just can't stick him being there. Even though there's been, like, during the summertime, there was suggestions perhaps that there'd been some rapprochement and that I think he'd featured in maybe some preseason friendly, but that's clearly not the case. So, yeah, so he had to go out on loan. There was strong talk of Juventus, but I think they wanted a permanent transfer, but he's an expensive signing. Expensive wages and expensive signing. And for the record, I think he'd be brilliant in Serie A. I think he'd be absolutely brilliant in Serie A. So I was disappointed when that didn't happen. And then Chelsea have come in to, I don't know, to bring, they've just got so many players. And if Maresca's settled at his 26, as he said he has, then why is he bringing in new people? Was that always part of the plan? It just feels weird that, you know, if they wanted Sancho, they've had all summer to get him. And he's been available. They've been saying, player for sale here, you know, with big neon signs above Jadon Sancho's head saying this guy is for sale. Surely something this could have been organised during the window. Why leave it to a deadline day? Just doesn't feel like it's been thought through. And I don't know whether or not the kid's going to get a game. I just think he seems to be moving from one chaotic moment to another. He should just go to Dortmund and just be done with it. But no.
Yeah. But it is on loan, isn't it?
It is.
So there is an expectation that you're going to play the player when you send him out on loan. So, but then again, I suppose this is a different circumstance, isn't it, Terry? Because it's not like they want to put him out to develop him. They just want to put him out.
Yeah.
They want to get rid of him.
Yeah.
They're going to run down his contract, basically, and then make it somebody else's problem.
It's essentially what's happened with Sterling as well. I mean, you'd be gutted if you were a Chelsea fan and you'd bought a number 7 shirt in the early part of the summer. Can you really guarantee that Neto's going to be wearing that? It's not going to be Sancho wearing it in a couple of weeks' time. It's mad, isn't it? I don't know how I felt really when I heard Sterling was coming to Arsenal, because, I mean, he's a great player. I really love him as a player, and you certainly want him in your side. But it struck me as this is not the sort of player that Arsenal really do need at the moment. I think they've got plenty of players like that, and there are other areas that they could strengthen in. But when I saw the deal that we were getting him, all right, 100 grand a week is still a lot, but that's only a third of his wages. Chelsea is still paying 2/3 of his wages at the moment.
Wow.
So Arsenal are getting him, well, I suppose, for the season. There's no loan fee, so they're getting him, I suppose, for, well, less than 5 million, I guess. Which, for a season of Raheem Sterling, if it works out well enough, that's a bargain.
It's an absolute bargain.
Yeah.
You get a player of that quality for, I know we're talking telephone numbers here for real people, but in context, that's not much for a player of that quality. And, you know, he's worked with Arteta before, hasn't he?
Yeah.
And having somebody with that level of maturity and intellect, I think it's fair to say, in and around the dressing room with some younger players, I think that's really going to help out. And if you need to turn to somebody, you've got him on your bench. I mean, there's not many players that you can get for that money that's going to deliver that level of value on the pitch. So I think it's a great move. Great move for him as well, I think.
Yeah.
But, and I think he'll understand that he's a late arrival and that he'll take a bit of time to integrate into the plan as well. So I don't think he'll have too many issues with starting from the bench, maybe in the initial stages of the season, because he knows that, I mean, what I think he would just doesn't want to do is to be frozen out, which is what won't happen. I think it's absolutely fantastic deal for Arsenal. But again, I think it just demonstrates this a lack of acumen on Chelsea's part. I mean, you know, you could criticise Sterling for the statement that he made at the time that he made it. And I think you can rightly criticise him, to be fair. I mean, it was a big stunt to pull. It was a bold stunt to pull. But at the same time, I think Chelsea have to acknowledge that, you know, they played a role in allowing the relationship they have with this guy to deteriorate to the point where he feels that this is something that he has to do. And they're not handling it. If you're going to have big squads, then you need to be able to manage the relationships within that squad. And Chelsea, it would appear in some instances, are completely failing. And so it doesn't bode well for them. And now they've given this guy, one of their better players, who they've decided they don't want to play, an England international, one of the best Premier League players has been in a very long time, and they've given him basically to their London rivals for a fraction of the price, and they've had to pay the shoulder cost of his way. He could be scoring goals, challenging, beating, not playing directly against Chelsea, obviously, but blocking Chelsea's ambitions while at the same time they're paying most of his wages. That's not a good situation to find yourself in, I'm afraid. And they should hopefully reflect on this and ask themselves whether or not they're doing football club management right.
Mm. Yeah, it's difficult. You don't know what's going on with these deals. You can only form your own opinions from how things actually pan out in the end. But I know there's been some messages going around on social media today about why the deal with Osimhen never came off for Chelsea. Osimhen hadn't played for Napoli all season. And today, I think it was announced that he's going on loan to Galatasaray, which just seems weird and bizarre. I mean, Napoli need to make money. They spent a lot of money this year, but they're sending out their best player on loan. It just doesn't make sense. And I'm sure someone can explain it. People often do, but it doesn't really make sense to me. And I was talking to a Chelsea fan that we all know the other day in response to the podcast we did two podcasts ago about Chelsea's approach to buying new players, of buying lots of players on long contracts. And he was trying to explain where I was going wrong with my idea that it was bad business. And what he was saying was, yeah, we're bringing them in on low wages, except for Sterling, and offering lots of incentives, so goal bonuses and assist bonuses. Now, apparently on this message that was going around on social media was a clipped WhatsApp statement, so it's probably fake news. But apparently Osimhen was offered a £100,000 goal bonus and a £50,000 assist bonus at Chelsea. So his wages were reliant on what he was going to output. But of course, if you're not, for some reason, in the team, like Sterling, then you're not going to be able to score goals and get assists. So this is, for me, where Chelsea's model falls down, because once decent players, or once high-profile players, you want to attract them to your club, they're not going to be the ones who are just going to rely on getting extras. They're going to want it all up front, and they're going to want that security there, which is probably why they couldn't agree the deal with him. Maybe this is the way that business is going to be done in future, where you're going to see teams that need to conform to PSR just selling players between each other for inflated figures and just to balance the books. But it's just weird. It's just weird now.
Maybe also the weekly wages being lower, the basic wages, if you like, for want of a better term, being lower also then affects the PSR as well.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
The bonuses don't count or don't count as much as they do as if it's there. So they feel they might be getting around it that way. Okay, that seems like a very plausible scenario, even though you may well be right, Graham, that piece of news on social may not have been accurate.
Yeah.
But if that's the principle behind the offer from Osimhen, then you can understand why he's done it. Napoli need to get Osimhen off the wage bill badly. Mm. Because, you know, they've signed their players, they've made their signings, they've got Lukaku, so they've got the guy they want. Now they needed to get Osimhen off the books, so they've had to do a late loan because the deadline's still open, obviously, for the Turkish Superliga, and so they've done that deal, and he's had to go to Galatasaray. And they've got money, you know, they've got pots of money there.
Yeah,
I know the Turkish League people have opinions on it, but like Galatasaray, I would suggest, are one of the cash richest clubs in the world. And they can find money to pay for this guy and get them off. I'm not suggesting anything untowards, but I am suggesting that Turkey is another country.
Yeah.
You know, and they're not part of the European Union, does things differently. So it does seem like an odd one from a football point of view, but it must mean that Napoli can breathe a sigh of relief, because then that means that they've now got at least an alleviation of the financial strain and no longer a restless player who probably wouldn't get picked. Because Conte will pick Lukaku because he loves him.
He does.
Bit of a strange one as well, because if that model is the one that Chelsea are going with, it's not the one that everybody else is going with. So they're saying, well, we'll give you lower wages and you have to earn your top-ups. And he'll just go, well, but I can just go across the road and just get me massive fat wages.
Exactly.
So I'm not so sure there's any legs in there. I thought I knew who you were talking about there, the Chelsea fan, but then you said he used the word incentive. That's quite a big word for the Chelsea fan I know. So it must have been somebody else. Maybe you can tell me off air.
I was clearly paraphrasing. I was basically translating into English. So,
did he get out his blotting paper and a crayon and try to explain the Chelsea financial model? Yeah, yeah. He did that with me as well.
Well, because it's an international break, we're going to be having far too much fun to write a box set this week. We take a break during the international break. We're also taking a break from the podcast. We're having a week off. Yes, because it's been such a long season. Remember right at the beginning what I said? How long the season's been dragging for? Yeah, so we're due a week off. And so we're taking a week off of that. So we'll be back in 2 weeks' time The box set will be back in 2 weeks' time, and then we'll be back when club football returns. And we'll have a big discussion about how Lee Carsley's England got on. So enjoy watching that, and enjoy watching the England game up in Scotland, because it looks like you won't be able to watch the Scotland match, but don't worry, because the England game will be carried on STV, so you will have some football to watch, and I'm sure you'll really appreciate that. But that's all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFellin, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
Yeah, I'm looking at Premier Sports schedule.
Yeah.
For Thursday evening. No Scotland versus Poland. And I'm looking on live sport on TV.
Yeah.
And I'm not seeing Scotland versus Poland at all.
Yeek.
So, yeah, they obviously, there's been some kind of cock up, I think. My missus knows some of the guys at Premier as well. And she knows a little bit about this sort of thing about rights and stuff. I might ask her, see if she knows what's happened.
It'd be interesting just to know.
That's her now flying into the air.
I was just.